you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in today. And a special thank you to our listener, Melanie, for suggesting we cover today's case. We want to give you all a heads up that we will be changing our release schedule temporarily. So for May, June, and July, we will be releasing episodes every other week instead of every week. This schedule will fit better with our schedules outside of the podcast, but then in August, we plan to return to weekly releases. We hope you all understand, and ultimately, this should be a good thing for the podcast in the long run, so I don't burn out, but this will begin after this episode. So next week, we will not have an episode, but the next week, we will, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think people forget that we still both have full-time jobs, and we have our wedding coming up, and some travel coming up this summer. So yeah, it just makes sense to scale back temporarily.
Yeah, exactly. There's just a lot going on, but I really like putting out weekly episodes because we get to feature 4 cases per month instead of 2 in a bi-weekly schedule. So yeah, this should just be a temporary thing. And then when August comes around, we'll be back to our normal schedule. All right, let's dive into the case. Bill Dwayne Shipley was 47 years old at the time of his disappearance in 2011. Bill lived in the small town of Goldsby, Oklahoma, outside of Oklahoma City. He lived alone in a mobile home park called Adkins Hill, but his work often took him out of state. Bill was a commercial paint contractor known for his reliability and strong work ethic. He never missed a job. One of his most consistent clients was the fast food chain Arby's, which frequently hired him as a contractor. Now, Arby's has locations across the United States, but Bill's work primarily took him to states surrounding Oklahoma, namely Kansas, Arkansas, Texas, and Missouri, but he also worked in his home state of Oklahoma too. Leading up to his disappearance, Bill had been spending most of his time working because, according to his family, summer was the busiest time of year for his work, and he disappeared in the summertime. So his hobbies, such as watching NASCAR, had largely been on the back burner. Bill was single when he vanished. He had been in a relationship, but it ended after he discovered the woman he was seeing had gotten involved with drugs. Through my research, I got the impression that Bill's circle was on the smaller side. However, he appeared to be very close with his immediate family. And when a victim has a smaller circle of people in their life, that can assist in an investigation, just in the sense that there are fewer people for law enforcement to investigate in that person's life. In mid-August 2011, Bill's family realized they hadn't heard from him in a while, and the family members started comparing notes of when they last talked to Bill and put together that the person in the family who spoke with Bill most recently was his dad, William. And this was about a month before when they were talking to each other on July 15th. When they spoke, it was a typical conversation, and Bill indicated he was looking forward to a painting job for Arby's he was about to start. I believe this job was in Arkansas, but some sources say in Kansas. Regardless of where it started, he had other jobs scheduled in those surrounding states after the initial job. So when his family didn't hear from him and Bill didn't pick up their phone calls, they figured he was busy with work. It was not uncommon for them not to hear from Bill for a few weeks at a time.
So for these jobs, does Bill handle everything himself, or does he have like a crew that he brings along with him to help with the painting and everything that goes along with that?
Typically, he worked alone. He didn't have a team. But I think depending on the size of the project, so with larger jobs he had, he would look for assistance sometimes. And that's something we're going to touch on a little bit later in this case.
Okay, so no consistent full-time help.
Right. To my knowledge, he was mostly a one-man show. So Bill's family is talking and they're realizing no one has heard from him for several weeks. But then Bill's dad's birthday went by and Bill didn't call his dad to say happy birthday. And then time passed on after that and they really began to worry. Bill's parents paid a visit to his mobile home to check on him. Bill owned two pickup trucks, a red 1988 Jeep Comanche and a red 2002 Chevrolet S10 extended cab. At any given time, at least one of those vehicles should have been at his home since Bill was the only person who used them. So when his family arrived to find both of his vehicles missing, they were perplexed. Strangely, Bill's front door to his home was open and his shed was unlocked. He was not the type to leave his home unlocked. Bill's family entered his home and found it in disarray. Drawers were open, items were scattered about, and all of the food in his refrigerator had spoiled because the electricity had been shut off. So they began to think that Bill hadn't paid his electric bill, which would be unusual for him, and it had been long enough that they'd shut it off. Everything about this scene was out of the ordinary. They also noticed Bill's work computer and attire were still in the home, and clothes were packed in a suitcase on his bed. Bill should have been out of state for one of his painting jobs at the time when they're making this discovery, so this was alarming, and it looked as though he never got the chance to leave for his job. But one of the most startling details was that his cat was inside his home. The cat was still alive, but clearly needed food and water. And the cat's condition indicated it had been alone for quite some time. After finding Bill's home in this condition on August 14th, 2011, Bill's family reported him as a missing person to the McLean County Sheriff's Office.
So you mentioned that his shed was unlocked. I'm assuming that's where he kept most of his painting equipment and miscellaneous stuff. Did it seem like anything out of the ordinary was taken? Did it seem like he was robbed?
So from his house overall, and including the shed, there were no items that were obviously missing. Bill was single, lived alone. It would be hard for anyone, I think, to know if anything were missing from his home, right? But there were some paint supplies that were missing, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But his Jeep Comanche, which was missing from the home, that was his work truck. So it was believed that the supplies could have been or should have been with the Jeep. We've often seen with disappearances, especially with adults, that law enforcement can be reluctant to begin investigating immediately. But fortunately, that doesn't appear to be the case in Bill's disappearance. There were enough suspicious circumstances to warrant an investigation from the outset. According to News 9, shortly after Bill was reported missing, law enforcement conducted a search in the area of his home and deployed a cadaver dog from the mobile home park to the nearby Canadian River, but nothing of significance was found. Although Bill's home was in disarray, there were no signs of a crime. The Daily Oklahoman reported that law enforcement did advanced testing for bodily fluids at his home, to no avail. Early on, the investigators formed the theory that if someone harmed Bill, it didn't happen inside his mobile home. One of the first questions that needed to be answered was, did Bill make it to his out-of-state job? And they quickly determined he had not. He had multiple jobs lined up before he disappeared, and Arby's confirmed he had not made it to any of those. And they were surprised he hadn't, since he had been such a consistent and reliable contractor in the past. Their attempts to reach Bill were unsuccessful. So that narrowed down the timeline a bit. Something had to have happened to him before he could leave. So they began retracing his steps using his bank and cell phone records once they were obtained. And his cell phone was not inside his home. The investigators found that the last outgoing call from Bill's phone was around 5 p.m. on Tuesday, July 19th, 2011, almost a month before he was reported missing by his family and just before he was to leave for work. After that, there was no activity until a week later, on July 26th, when someone, we don't know who, attempted to call him, but the call went unanswered. That incoming call pinged a cell tower located within a 6-mile radius of Goldsby, suggesting the phone was still in the general area of Bill's home, despite not being used since the day he vanished. And that's all we know about Bill's phone. It doesn't seem like any texts or phone calls provided a clue leading up to his disappearance. All of Bill's bank activity ceased after July 19th. The last activity from him was on July 19th. That day, he made a large withdrawal between $3,000 and $4,000 from an ATM in Goldsby. Surveillance footage confirmed that Bill made the withdrawal. While it might seem like a lot of cash to carry, and I think in any other disappearance we're talking about, this would be of great significance, someone making this kind of withdrawal right before they disappear, but it wasn't unusual for Bill. He was known to have between $3,500 and $5,000 with him at any given time. According to his family, he didn't attempt to conceal it either when pulling out his wallet. But you might be wondering how he managed to withdraw that much at once, because most ATMs have a daily limit of less than $3,000. So all I can say is that his bank's ATM must have had a higher limit. Later that day, Bill visited a paint store in the neighboring city of Norman. There, he purchased paint and supplies, spending nearly the entire amount he had withdrawn from the ATM, so a little more than $3,000. This was an indicator that Bill, as his family thought, had every intention of completing the work he had been contracted for. There was a suitcase at his home. Now there's the purchase of paint and supplies for the job. So what stopped him? And this is what I was alluding to before. So the paint and supplies he bought were not found at his home and have never been recovered. But there was an ATM slip for the transaction that day inside his home. So we know he made it back, but left again for some reason, or someone forced him out. The investigators felt confident that the last time Bill was confirmed to be alive was on July 19th. This was further supported by the fact that he hadn't checked his mail since then, and there were truly no signs of life after that day. But that wasn't all they learned about July 19th. The investigators discovered that Bill went to Sonic that evening on Highway 9 across from the Riverwind Casino in Norman, Oklahoma, just a 7-minute drive from his home. Based on the surveillance footage, Bill entered the drive-thru in a Chevy pickup and placed an order later determined to be an iced lemon tea and a watermelon slushy.
Do we know if that was his typical order at Sonic? And if he typically ordered two drinks at a time?
Bill's family confirmed that he really liked iced tea with lemon. So that was his go-to drink at Sonic or anywhere, I guess. But they said they couldn't picture him ordering a watermelon slushy. They never knew him to order that kind of drink. And no, I don't think he would typically order more than one drink at once. According to the McLean County Sheriff's Office, they established from the footage that Bill was driving his truck and there was an unidentified passenger. I've seen this video and I can't see anyone in the passenger seat. I can hardly see anyone in the driver's seat, but you can see an arm come out of the driver's side window as the truck pulls up to the drive-through window to pay. And the hand is holding what appears to be cash for the purchase, but I'm not 100% sure. And they say the driver was Bill, but it's challenging to make out anything. Although, logically, it makes sense that there was someone else in the truck with him because two drinks were ordered. And maybe law enforcement has seen an enhanced version of the footage that wasn't distributed to the public. This passenger remains unidentified. Their choice not to come forward after Bill disappeared certainly casts suspicion on them. The investigators and Bill's family would like to know who he went to Sonic with, and his family has asked other questions about this person, such as, where did they go? Did they see anything at the house? Did someone else meet them? Although they don't know who Bill was with, his family maintains that he would not have let a stranger enter his vehicle. And they did find a Sonic cup when they went to Bill's home searching for him. So similarly to the ATM slip, this supported the idea that Bill had returned home before something went wrong.
Are they certain it was from that day?
They seem to be certain. Yeah. So I was thinking maybe it had the, I think Sonic does this where they put like a sticker on the cup and it says the drink order and then the date and time. But I'm not 100% sure on that. It could just be that they're making that assumption because they don't think Bill would leave a Sonic cup from days ago in his home. So at that point, the sheriff's office had gathered several important pieces of information, but a major mystery remained: Bill's trucks. They were both missing from his home. And when the investigators spoke with Bill's neighbors, there was one neighbor who told them she hadn't seen Bill in 3 weeks, though his vehicles were still parked outside of his home about 3 weeks ago. A week later, she noticed the extended cab Chevy pickup was gone, and by the following week, the Jeep Comanche had disappeared as well. They spoke to her at the beginning of the investigation, so her estimation that she had last seen Bill 3 weeks before them probably wasn't too far off, considering he was last known to be alive a little more than 3 weeks before they spoke with her. But if she's correct about the vehicles, they didn't exactly disappear when Bill did, or even at the same time as each other. Law enforcement questioned everyone living in the mobile home park when Bill disappeared, and this seemed to be the most valuable information they received as far as they have shared. Just about a week after they began investigating Bill's disappearance, on August 20th, his Jeep Comanche turned up. The truck was parked at an apartment complex near the intersection of Southwest 89th Street and Southwestern Avenue in South Oklahoma City, about a 25-minute drive from Bill's home. The investigators collected fingerprints and fibers from the vehicle and inspected it for any evidence of a struggle, but found no sign that a crime had taken place in the vehicle. There was no blood, and the truck was still in good condition. It's often reported that the paint and supplies Bill purchased on the day he was last known to be alive were missing from this truck. Specifically, two airless paint sprayers, red and white paint, a generator, lights, and three ladders. I don't believe he purchased all of that on the day he disappeared, like the ladders he just kept in the truck, and they were nowhere to be found. But his ladder rack was still attached to the vehicle. So as I said before, this is important because this was his work truck. They figured they would find these items when they found his truck. And to be clear, we know he didn't make it to his painting job in Arkansas. So it's not as though something happened to him once he got there, and that's why all of these items were missing. So I think it's interesting that these supplies were missing. And law enforcement has checked local pawn shops consistently over the years to see if any of these items turned up.
None of the items got returned back to the original store, right?
That's a really good question. I don't think that's been confirmed. I mean, since Bill paid cash for those items, if someone had a copy of the receipt, anybody could go in with that receipt, presumably with the items, and then get the cash back.
Right.
I mean, unless the store has some different policy where they don't give cash back to people. I don't know why that would be the case, but that's a good point that, yeah, someone could have returned these items. And I don't know that law enforcement would have been able to determine that.
Yeah, someone could have seen him drop over $3,000 on all that and got the idea in their head that they could steal it and then return it for a quick $3,000.
Yeah, I mean, I hope there would be a way for law enforcement to track that down. But I don't know if that was considered. And maybe if someone did something to Bill, maybe that wasn't their intent to go return these items to the store. Maybe they wanted to sell them, or maybe they wanted his cash. We'll get into all of that later, but it's a good theory.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't be the smartest con in the world. There's a lot of visibility there when you have all these items that you return for, hoping to return for cash.
Yeah, it could raise some red flags for the employees. Yeah. Be like, why are you returning all of this? I guess you could just say, I mean, you don't have to say anything really, but you could say you had a job, but then the person didn't need you anymore or something.
Yeah. And I'm sure the stores keep track of obviously what was bought, but at the same time, what was returned.
Yeah. That data should be stored somewhere. So we don't know if the location of Bill's truck was significant, or if the person who abandoned it thought an apartment complex might be an ideal spot to leave Bill's truck, considering people might not notice a vehicle parked there for an extended period, especially if it's an apartment complex where people don't have assigned parking spots. Around the time they found the Jeep Comanche, they came upon one of their biggest leads yet. When the investigators reviewed Bill's credit card statements, they found three transactions that occurred a few weeks after Bill was known to be alive and just before he was reported missing. Bill's credit card was used on August 12th to make purchases at Murphy USA, which is a gas station, and Saltgrass Steakhouse, both located on North Interstate Drive in Norman, Oklahoma, approximately a 10-minute drive north of Bill's home. The next day, August 13th, there was a transaction at Home Depot on Shields Boulevard in Oklahoma City. And this location is about a 20-minute drive from Bill's home, but just a few miles from where his truck was abandoned. The sheriff's office has not divulged if they know what was purchased at the gas station or Home Depot. Initially, they didn't know who was using Bill's credit cards. It didn't seem likely that it was Bill, considering the suspicious circumstances up to that point, but they confirmed someone else was using his credit card when they retrieved surveillance footage from the gas station and restaurant. The footage showed a white man, estimated to be in his early 50s at the time, using Bill's card. His estimated height is between 6 feet and 6'2", and weight around 250 pounds with a large abdomen. He has light brown hair, a medium complexion, and light-colored eyes. He wore tan overalls, a long-sleeved shirt, brown work boots, and a green John Deere cap. Law enforcement said this man often wore hats and sunglasses and even a towel around his face to conceal his identity, or so they believed. He could just be the type to wear hats, but I suppose the sunglasses inside and especially a towel on his head could conceal his face more. Somehow, they determined he has light-colored eyes, but in all of the images I've seen of him, he's wearing sunglasses, so if they have footage where he's not wearing sunglasses, I don't believe they shared that, which doesn't make sense because those images would be more helpful than the one where he's wearing sunglasses. But they have shared images from the footage. They needed help from the public to identify this man using Bill's card. And as always, we will share these images plus the fairly detailed composite sketch that was developed of this man on our Instagram, Key to the Case podcast. Although he potentially had access to Bill's debit card, this individual, who they're calling a person of interest, did not withdraw money from Bill's bank account that contained around $7,200. That money has remained untouched since Bill disappeared. In September 2011, the month after Bill was reported missing, law enforcement shared that this man was mostly alone in the footage.
So just to confirm, there's no way of knowing if this man is the same person that was in Bill's truck at the Sonic drive-thru?
Exactly. Yeah, we don't know. Law enforcement might have a theory on that. But based on what I've seen, it would probably be hard to confirm that because the Sonic footage is so terrible. It's just so grainy. But maybe. Maybe they have enhanced footage, like I said before. It has been posited that this individual who was using Bill's card or someone close to him had been watching Bill's mobile home because all activity stopped once law enforcement came out to Bill's home. He used the card on August 12th and 13th, but once Bill was reported missing on August 14th, the transactions abruptly stopped. We don't know if that was merely a coincidence or an indication that he realized law enforcement was beginning to investigate and the continued use of Bill's cards would have been unwise. But surely he knew using them at all was risky, especially at places with security cameras. And I found his activity interesting. He grabbed a bite to eat, made a purchase at a gas station and Home Depot. He wasn't going all out with this credit card like you might expect. And the dates are puzzling too. If this person had access to Bill's credit card since he disappeared, which is a possibility, why didn't he use his credit card sooner?
Yeah, maybe he thought that these purchases that he was making were so inconsequential that it wouldn't be picked up on anyone's radar. Like, he's not going all out, like you said. He's not buying thousands of dollars worth of stuff. But at the same time, you're using a stranger's credit card, presumably a stranger's credit card. And that by itself would attract attention.
And a missing person at that. And you say stranger, but the police actually think the person who did this to him most likely knew him, which is interesting because when Bill's family saw the person of interest, they didn't recognize him. And the images are clear enough. They're not ideal, but clear enough that they most likely would have recognized this man if they knew him. But it's not like they know everyone in Bill's life, right?
Yeah, I couldn't imagine they know all the people Bill works with. I mean, probably his close friends, but not the people he could work with from time to time.
Yes, there could be someone in his life that he worked with in the past on a job, and maybe no one else in Bill's life would know that person. So that makes this difficult. But in my opinion, if you knew this man, whoever you are, if you knew this man and saw the images of him, you could identify him, especially if he were dressed in a way he normally dressed, which makes it so surprising that he hasn't been identified.
Yeah. And if this was someone that Bill worked with at a specific Arby's location, you'd think they'd be able to go to that specific Arby's and see if they would recognize this person.
Yeah, I guess a good starting point with that line of thinking would be talking with Arby's and asking if they knew, for all the jobs he worked on, all the locations, did he bring anyone with him? Because right. I would think they would have record of that. I mean, I feel like they should. So that could be a good starting point and as far as that goes. But like I said, I think a lot of the time he did work alone. Law enforcement has questioned if this man could be from an area other than Oklahoma City. But if he harmed Bill in July, then used Bill's cards in August, if he were from a different area, why would he come back to the Oklahoma City metro area to use Bill's cards?
So they have footage of him inside these places. Were they not able to, I mean, at these places where they're not outside cameras of, like, you know, the gas station, I'm sure they have cameras aimed at the gas pumps. I'm wondering if they were able to determine what vehicle he was driving.
If they were able to, they didn't share that, which I think would be really odd for them not to share that because it would be one more piece of information about this man that could help identify him. But you're right. You would think, especially at the gas station, that if they have cameras inside, that they would probably have cameras outside facing the parking lot and the gas pump. So what happened there? I don't know. That's something they just haven't addressed. There are a lot of questions that law enforcement hasn't addressed at all. The investigators didn't receive many tips after sharing the images from the surveillance footage, but seemed to have received some tips from people about the person of interest, because in 2021, 10 years after Bill disappeared, Detective David Tompkins with the McLean County Sheriff's Office told the Purcell Register he had a good idea of the identity of the man from the security cameras. He refrained from naming who he believed that man was, but it feels like a huge piece of information because prior to 2021, it seemed like they didn't know who the man was. And maybe they don't. Maybe they don't have the right person, but I don't think he'd put that out there if they weren't fairly certain. However, at the same time, in 2021, he said, quote, "This is solvable if we just had a few more answers to questions. Right now, we don't know how to ask the questions because we don't know who they are," end quote. They meaning the suspect. So was the man who used Bill's card, whose identity they have a good idea of, not a suspect? For more than a year since Bill disappeared, his other truck, the Chevy, remained missing, despite law enforcement searching scrapyards and car lots. But on August 14th, 2012, exactly 1 year after Bill was reported missing, his Chevy was located in the clubhouse parking lot of the East Lake Village Apartments in Oklahoma City. This apartment complex is just a few miles down the road from where his Jeep was recovered and about a 20-minute drive north of Bill's home. This was the truck Bill was last known to be driving, the one seen on the Sonic security camera. According to reporting from the Purcell Register, it wasn't uncommon for vehicles to sit for months at the East Lake Village Apartments since it was home to a number of military tenants, often away on deployment. But when a new manager took over a few months before this, she eventually noticed the pickup and tagged it. After it was towed, impound lot staff ran the plates and VIN, which flagged it as a vehicle sought by law enforcement. The Oklahoma City Police were notified, and they, in turn, contacted McLean County authorities who were investigating Bill's disappearance. Law enforcement found nothing of interest inside the vehicle. None of Bill's missing paint and supplies were inside, and they had no idea how long the truck had been there. They knew at least for a few months, but for all they knew, it could have been there for a year since Bill disappeared. I asked the question earlier if the person who abandoned the truck was familiar with the apartment complex that truck was parked at, or if they found it to just be a convenient abandonment site. So in my opinion, the discovery of this truck, the second truck, points to the offender seeing apartment complexes as ideal locations to dump a vehicle.
Yeah, and if you were responsible for Bill's disappearance, you're not going to drop this car anywhere that could be tied back to you.
Right. They probably just dumped it somewhere they had driven by before and thought, no one will notice this truck here. If they will, it'll be quite a while after we drop it here. In 2018, Bill's family shared that early on in the investigation, they received two anonymous phone calls to their home. The caller provided a tip, but they never heard from them again, and Bill's family did not share what the tip was, likely as instructed by law enforcement. They hoped the caller would contact them again, no matter how minor the tip. Then, in 2021, the investigators disclosed that before Bill's disappearance, he posted a Craigslist ad for a painter's helper for his upcoming work. A theory that hasn't been ruled out is that Bill met up with someone from Craigslist to potentially hire, and they harmed him from there. You'd think law enforcement could subpoena all Bill's Craigslist records to determine if he communicated with someone about this job. It sounded like they had access to his account because they saw that he posted this in the first place, or if he posted his cell phone number on the ad. If someone contacted him that way, they should have had access to that. But if they found anything of significance there, they haven't revealed that. So it may have just been a dead end, or they're withholding that information. I guess one question I have would be, Bill's family said he wouldn't let a stranger inside his vehicle or give a stranger a ride. But if he met up with someone asking for help for his upcoming painting jobs, would he give that person a ride if he felt comfortable around them? And then in that scenario, you know, no one in his family or his friends would know who that person is. But you would think there would have to be some record of that, some digital record of this person making contact with Bill. Bill's disappearance is baffling. There were no clear warning signs or circumstances in his life that might have predicted something could go wrong. He had no criminal record, no ties to gambling or drugs, and wasn't known to engage in shady business practices. But there are some strong beliefs on the part of law enforcement and Bill's family. One, he was a victim of foul play. Two, the person most likely knew him, even if for a short period. And three, more than one person played a role in Bill's disappearance. With the way Bill's vehicles went missing and ended up in different locations, it seemed probable that more than one person was involved. Maybe not in harming Bill, but at the very least, assisting after the fact. But think about how this would have had to have gone down if just one person was responsible for moving his vehicles. They would likely drive, or I guess walk, to his mobile home. They had the keys then for one of his trucks. They then drove it miles away, parked it somewhere, and then how do they get back to where they came from? Somehow they do. And then they go back to the mobile home, likely at a different date, do the same thing and move it even farther away, and then somehow get back to where they came from. I mean, then you think about it with two people involved. One person is driving a vehicle. The other person is inside the car. They go to Bill's home. They move the truck. The other person follows behind and then gives that person a ride back to where they came from. That just makes way more sense than one person doing this. On top of all of that, Bill's family feels that one person would have struggled to overpower Bill and he wouldn't have gone down without a fight. This case becomes easier to understand when you envision the involvement of at least two offenders. Like I said, the detectives agree with this, and Detective Tompkins has shared that he believes two people were involved. And because of Bill's mobile home's proximity to the Canadian River, it's only a few miles north of his home, he thinks Bill was taken to the river, killed there, and disposed of in the river or along the riverbank.
So how does this theory originate?
Good question. I don't know. Either they have information that we don't know about that relates to this river, or it's just a working theory he has that he feels is probable for some reason. I mean, it doesn't seem unlikely to me, but I don't know how he arrived at this theory.
Yeah, maybe in the past he's worked on a similar case to this and this is where the body was disposed.
Could be, yeah. He could be taking prior cases he's worked and applying that to Bill's case. But something that's difficult about this case is, where do you search? Bill could be anywhere. And where Bill lived, there's a lot of just open land and wooded areas. So unfortunately, I think it would be hard to know where to search other than around the mobile home park, unless they get information leading them to a certain location. But why? What did someone gain by harming Bill? They didn't keep his trucks. There was nothing known to have been stolen from his home. So could it have been someone who saw Bill with thousands in cash on the day of his disappearance, or even in the past, and they knew he often carried cash and they hoped to get their hands on it?
Yeah, and I can't imagine this was related to his work. Maybe he was a very good contractor and was securing these jobs over other contractors, but I can't see that would push someone to get rid of Bill.
I would be surprised if that were the case, but I guess when we're thinking of theories other than wanting to steal from him, that could be one. But if someone wanted to get their hands on his cash, they would have been disappointed to learn that he had already spent all of that cash, or most of it, when he was shopping at the paint store on the day of his disappearance. So did they learn that after hurting him and went to his home searching for more cash, causing the disarray that was reported? Bill's family has absolutely expressed concern over this very scenario, that someone saw Bill with a large sum of cash and it made him a target. The paint and supplies he purchased are still missing. I suppose those items could have been of interest to the offender or offenders, like we talked about before, or it could have been something after the fact. They realized he already spent all the cash, but they thought, well, we have access to these supplies now. How can we make money from this? I spent a lot of time thinking about a scenario that could make sense in this case. And one I think is possible is that Bill had one or more people over to his home for one reason or another. They convinced him to go somewhere in their vehicle and then harmed him from there, thinking they could get something valuable from him. And then in that scenario, I think they went back to his home, rifled through his belongings, leaving the home with the door open. There are other scenarios, of course. This is just one possibility. If stealing from Bill was not the driving force to harm him, I think there had to be something going on in Bill's life that we don't know about. Bill's family has plots in an Oklahoma cemetery with an empty grave reserved for him. Etched onto the stone are crossed racing flags, a nod to Bill's love for NASCAR. Bill's sister Valerie told News 9, quote, "It's something I would not wish on anybody. My parents have been through so much pain and so much heartache. Every day it's on our minds, every day," end quote. Bill is a white male with short brown hair, scruffy to clean-shaven facial hair, just depending on the time, and blue eyes. He wears wire-framed glasses, stands around 5'8" to 5'9", and weighs approximately 175 pounds. Bill would be 61 years old today if still alive. If you have information related to the disappearance of Bill Dwayne Shipley or the person of interest in this case, please contact the McLean County Sheriff's Office at 405-527-2141 or reach out to the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation at 800-522-8017. Thank you all so, so much for listening this week. As a reminder, our new schedule is in effect now. So we'll be back with a new case in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.